right, good evening, everyone. Mark Rosen, your host. Welcome to another edition of Purple Past, Viking Purple Past. And we are very pleased to have with us tonight one of the best defensive players in the history of the Minnesota Vikings, a guy I had the pleasure of covering and getting to know very well when he was with the Minnesota Vikings, the one and only Joey Browner. Joey, good evening. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
Yeah, it's good to hear your voice. Just let's start where you are right now. How's life treating Joey Browner at this moment?
Oh, it's fabulous. I'm here to be able to see it, feel it, breathe it. I'm here. A lot of people aren't above ground right now.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. Now, you are, for fans listening right now, I see you all the time, but you are residing in Minnesota. You're here most of the time. I know you go to a number of games. Is that what you're doing at the moment?
Oh, yes, I live here. I've been living here 30 years. I haven't gone anywhere. Once I retired, I still remained here in the state, and I'm active in the community and an activist for civil rights and just justice for our communities here to be able to live here in the Minneapolis area.
It's interesting, and I don't mean to bring up kind of a social thing that happened this week, but the celebrated divorce after 72 days of Kim Kardashian and Chris Humphries. Kim apparently didn't want to live in Minnesota. Now, you're a Southern Cal guy. You went to Southern Cal. You were a first-round pick. A lot of people thought maybe you'd head back out to go west, young man. But you have made Minneapolis your home, and you're okay living in Minnesota despite our winters.
Well, it's the four seasons, and I'm a four-season person. And we're born and raised, actually, in Ohio.
Yes, you were.
And we have the seasons. And then going to California, they say it never rains in California. Yet, that's a fact. It don't rain in California. So I like the rain and snow and those type of things. But the quality of living also here is, I believe, puts a couple years on you too.
Yeah, that it does. You did grow up in Warren, Ohio. I mean, that's sort of the hotbed. What was football like? Was it as advertised, Joey? When you hear about the storied careers and the sort of the hotbed of the cradle of football, you hear about Pittsburgh a lot, but also Ohio.
Well, there are the communities, and the community that we lived in was an Italian community, and it was a close bond community that took care of the children. And so we had opportunities to have, like, Pee Wee football, Little League baseball, Colt League baseball, more advanced football and different sports that the community was behind. And so it was a lot of what we had on our side of town was called West Side Pride. So we were piled from our little ones all the way through a high school, and that was the type of community awareness that we had, spirit, as you say.
Yeah, big rivalry. You're at Western Reserve High in Warren. I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, almost like Friday Night Lights, a TV show. I'm sure they had that feel to it every Friday night.
Well, yes, because everybody was there, and they were having 15,000 at that time at high school games. But I was at home, Well, you know, I would get a chance to hear my brothers on the radio. They broadcast them on the radio, and in that particular northeastern Ohio, you had the Stoops come from Youngstown, Ohio.
Wow,
the Bradishaw come from Howland. And then they had Austintown. And so it's a number of areas right there that the number of players came from there. From Warren, G. Harding, that's where Paul Warfield had come from. And that's the school that my mother went to. So the person that we knew that had went on and made it in professional sports.
Well, you earned Parade All-American honors as well. I know you were a basketball player. You ran some track and field. I'm sure you had a lot of opportunities to go to any number of colleges. You ended up at the University of Southern California. What was the tipping point for you in deciding to go out to Southern Cal?
Well, I figure if the first man to step off of the lunar lander when the first steps on the moon was a USC grad, I had to go there. They sent people to the moon, you know. So, it was a great opportunity. It was where, at that time, I had to go away from where my brothers went to school because of, in order for me to make it, I felt I had to break off from that and make my own carbon imprint.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I, that's why the opportunity at Southern Cal came. And it was, he's a grad assistant. His name was Harold Steele, and he just came to me and said, you know, if you really want to have an opportunity for your dreams to become a reality, the University of California can make that happen for you.
We're talking with Joey Browner, one of the great safeties of all time for the Minnesota Vikings, from the number one draft pick in 1983 and played here through 90 to 92, and then ended up, I think, going to the Tampa Bay Bucs as well. But let's get back to Southern Cal. I'm looking at the defensive backfield you had out there. My goodness gracious. But you have Dennis Smith, Ronnie Lott, Tennessee Titans coach. I didn't realize this. Jeff Fisher was in your backfield. You also had Anthony Munoz on your team and Marcus Allen and Charles White. I mean, a who's who of great college football players, Joey.
Yeah, and you forgot Bruce Matthews.
Oh, yeah, that guy. Yeah.
You know, Chip Banks and
jeez,
Dwayne Dickett, you know, Jack Del Rio. So there's a number of us out there, man.
So you were in the same defensive backfield as Ronnie Lott.
Yeah.
Did anybody even dare try to run a pass pattern between you two guys? I can't even comprehend the number of hits you laid into both the wide receivers in the West Coast.
Well, at that time, I was a cornerback.
Oh, okay.
I was playing man all the time.
Mm-hmm.
He was the strong safety, and then Dennis Smith was the free safety. So between those two, just knowing that you had the confidence you can go out there and play man,
right?
They really didn't project the ball down the field. And so it was a lot of, I had a lot of opportunity at that time to learn how to be a defensive back.
Yeah.
Because when I came from my senior year in high school, I graduated in Atlanta, Georgia. My brother, my mother decided to move us down to Atlanta my senior year for her work that she was doing with the NAACP and the Urban League.
Mm-hmm.
And then I have an opportunity to live in the state that my dad came from, because when my dad was alive, we never had an opportunity to go to Georgia from where he's from. But my senior year down there, I was defensive lineman of the year for the state of Georgia. See, and so when I moved to, had an opportunity to go to Southern Cal, I asked where I could play the quickest, and they said defensive back. So I moved to corner. And from there, I was still getting used to it because I was in a 3-point stance
in
high school. So,
wow, I can't imagine.
I don't realize that I changed from being a defensive lineman to where I changed to be a defensive back.
So I didn't realize Jeff Fisher, we've seen on the sidelines for many, many years until he is no longer with Tennessee at the moment. What kind of player was Jeff?
Jeff was outstanding. He started off as a flanker back. And so from there, then he became a defensive back. So that shows how versatile and intelligent Jeff Fisher really is. Because if you're playing both sides of the ball, that takes a unique individual.
So you were the number one draft choice for the Minnesota Vikings in 1983. What do you recall about your rookie year here with Minnesota?
My rookie year here in Minnesota was that I didn't realize we were going to play on acid turf. I thought, when I was at Southern Cal, we had grass out there, so I wasn't keeping up with stadiums and that type of thing. So I just figured when I come to Minnesota, when I got drafted by Minnesota, that I'll be playing outdoors.
Yeah, you didn't do your research, did you? They had this little Teflon roof over here. We call the Metrodome. They still have it.
I just thought that they still had the
Met Stadium.
Stadium.
Yeah,
they might still play some outdoors, you know.
So that was pretty hard on your body. Is that what you're trying to get to?
Well, the AstroTurf, yeah, it really was, because when I came here in 83, I had a size 12 foot.
Mm-hmm.
When I finished playing in 91 here, I went all the way up to a size 15.
What? How's that possible?
Well, it's because of the running. Because the pounding that you take, the impact that you are running on concrete, that's all it is, and a little bit of whatever it is on their turf,
mm-hmm.
that it it has to go somewhere, and so it goes to your feet. And so in saying that, the turf is unnatural to play on, and it was just pounding for those years that expanded through my feet. It's just like a basketball.
Was that typical of some of your teammates too, Joey?
Yes, because, you know, you've heard of that turf toe that came out.
Yeah.
You never heard of that about a grass toe.
No, you haven't. So, do you still wear a size 15 shoe now instead of a 12 that you started out? Or did it shrink again?
Yes, because of the expansion of my feet, my digits, and then being able to absorb that punishment, because that pounding is like, you know, a jackhammer trying to break through concrete.
Yeah. That, I've never heard of such... That's an amazing story, and I'm sure you got more stories to get to as well. We're going to take a quick break right now, and I want to talk to you about some of the more interesting games you recall and some of the teammates you had. We're talking to Joey Braun, one of the most ferocious hitters in the history of the National Football League, longtime safety with the Minnesota Vikings. Stay with us. You're listening to Vikings Purple Past here on The Fan.
This is E.J. Henderson with the Minnesota Vikings. You're listening to...
Back to Vikings Purple Past. We're talking, having a very interesting, breezy conversation with Joey Braun, longtime safety with the Minnesota Vikings. Six-time Pro Bowler, four-time member of all Madden team as well. And Joey, let's get back. You were talking about your memories of playing at the Metrodome. At the same time, what kind of physical toll did it take on your body beyond the turf situation as you went on with your career?
Devastating, because every play or even practice on it, it's affected my whole being because it was this unnatural surface that we're playing on, and then it has to go somewhere. So every ounce of every bit of me has been it's been brutalized, you know.
Yeah.
From just taking all the impacts and all the practices and all the running and all that. So my complete body is an indication of what actually took place out there.
And you, I recall you prepared yourself as well as anyone I can recall. And you may be one of the first players I remember going through the martial arts training during the offseason, which has become sort of more normal. And Jared Allen, a lot of guys have done it. Did you do that for football purposes or just to get in better overall shape?
Well, it was my life. You know, I started when I was 13 years old, Mark, and from there I just kept evolving because it was I forged myself in my own will, and that's what martial arts and kung fu. Kung fu only means hard work, and so for me in martial arts it means I'm the material, and it's what I do to change myself into an art form. And so football is an art form to where, you know, you have to, you know, it's like running, tackling, blocking, and then making plays all in that. And so I just wanted to take it to another level. And so I studied martial arts. I still go to the school that I started with when I came here and still teach. And just took it to where... tackling was my main source of employment, tackling people.
Mm-hmm.
So by doing and saying that, I had to learn the mechanics of how the body actually moves. And so in martial arts, that's what it trains you, to be able to understand the mobility of the body and the different techniques to take people down. That was my job, was to learn how to tackle people. And so now...
Yeah.
You can't use my technique no more because it's outlawed.
Well, I was
not outlawed. You can't use it, which is, you know, the horse collar.
Well, I mean, that brings me to my next topic. I mean, it's one of the more celebrated plays in Viking history. I think it was right after the Twins won the World Series in 87. You're playing the Broncos on that Monday night, and Gerald Wilhite was breaking away, and you grabbed him from behind, pulled him down. I think the poor kid broke his leg, but that's the play that you would have been flagged for today, and you were not given a penalty for that play, correct?
Yes, because they said any means necessary to get him down. And that's what it still should be, because I know he'd be suited what I had to do. I had to dive a couple yards in order to be able to do that. And so by taking your hands away from a defender to make a play, well, that's like you might as well put a flag on them in order for them to direct where they can make their play. Because when you take away your hands and the length of your arms, that takes away the weapon that you have as a defensive player.
There seems to be a common thread, because I talked in the last week, I've talked to both Jim Marshall, Chris Dolman, and now yourself, and all of you are in agreement about the rule changes that have really benefited offenses. And Chris said it's almost like arena football right now. From a guy who played your position as well as you did, and you're watching today's game, do you think you could have been as good a player today as you were many years ago, given the rules that you would have been governed under today?
I've been a wide receiver.
Hey, you would have been just fine. You were versatile enough. Oh, that's funny.
I know. You don't get hit. The ball gets thrown to you all the time. Hey. Easiest job.
Easiest job in the world. Oh, that's good stuff.
Well, no, no, it's not easy. Don't
no, I know, wrong, I know. But it,
yeah,
it is different.
I would come back as a wide receiver.
Well, are there any more? I mean, you think of some of the great safeties in the game. Do you watch? You watch the game a lot. You know the Vikings right now are having issues in that department, personnel-wise, and maybe just from a technique standpoint, but it seems like it is more difficult. And do you think it's the NFL is protecting the players by getting rid of the horse collar, that it was contributing to more injuries than they wanted on their plate?
Well, they're having people make the decisions that didn't play.
Mm-hmm.
So, in terms of that, because you're looking at medical side of it now, and they don't play. So what's happening is that they're making it where they don't have to address that anymore, and then making it where tackling, where the tackling piece of it, they feel is where all the injuries come from. No, it comes from just being out there, period.
Sure.
You know, you get injured being there. So taking that element out, I think that's what they're looking at, is the medical behind it. Well, that's what they're paying all these dollars for, to be able to take care of yourself during the time if something happens, because that's what they're paying for, is what could possibly happen, right?
Right, right.
And so back then, they didn't pay us for what was possibly happening. They paid us for content.
Yeah.
And then the other piece is that, even if we were not employed by the team, they still own our physical rights. So these young people have a free liberty to where they can go in anywhere and sell their physical rights. Whereas when I came through, my physical rights were still under the old contracts, which meant that they can still hold a contract. Well, I would be under contract with them, but they can still hold my physical rights.
Yeah, I get it. I know what you're saying. Hey, who were some of the toughest running backs, wide receivers, guys you played against? I mean, for a guy who loved contact and, you know, you made your living doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Who were some of the guys that stood out, some opponents that you faced, that Barry Sanders, those type of runners?
Well, all of them, but Barry Sanders particularly is one, but all of them, Mark, because if you underestimated any of them, that's why they call them professional. You know, you got to go out there every Sunday. I tackled everybody like I was tackling Walter Payton.
Mm.
That's the way I looked at it. If you're out there, you run like Walter Payton, I take you down like Walter Payton. So that was the way I tackled all of them. It's the same as I would tackle Walter Payton. So because I ended up on a highlight film, and it wasn't even my play. So it was like running after
Steve Young.
Vince Young.
Oh, Steve Young.
Not Vince Young. Steve Young.
Oh, yeah.
He ran, running after him.
I've seen that play about 1,000 times. I'm sure you have as well. Every time they run some of the greatest runs in the history of, you know, Vic running, and here's Steve Young running through the whole Viking defense with Millard and all those guys chasing him in San Francisco during that game.
And I was covering somebody, and they had to get off cover and then chase him.
Well, you only had over 1,100 tackles in your career. I think you caused 18 fumbles, recovered 16 of them as well. It's just astonishing statistics that you put together, Joey. And you look back now, I mean, you're dealing with some physical ailments, and like a lot of guys in your peer group, but was it all worth it?
Every bit of it. Because I'm in the capsule of history of football that during my time, these young people will not appreciate. was that when I came in during the time where individuals had to really block, and that meant that the offensive linemen, they couldn't extend their arms.
Mm-hmm.
And it was under the old rules where if your quarterback was knocked out, then you put the next one in. If he got knocked out, then you got to go get somebody who played quarterback in high school, right?
Right.
So it was about mano y mano. And then also, and then being in that change to where, you know, I was there with the change of the way that the eight-man front or the Star Wars or this, what do they call it now, Tampa 2.
Correct.
You know, to be a part of that evolution of defenses. And then also the offense, you know, the West Coast offense that comes out now. So to be in there to be the defensive end of it and the offensive end of it, and then special teams because, you know, I was all-pro special teams player also.
Yeah.
And by that piece coming out, that's how I was all-pro. It was my first all-pro. That made it where it showed that special teams was a very, very, very critical piece of the game, and that's what Bud Grant expressed. And by me obtaining that honor during the time when Bud actually retired.
Yeah, his last year.
So much to me. Yeah. Because he was the one who drafted me.
Yeah, that's quite a testament. When Bud, you're right, that was Bud's last year, and then Steckel came here in 84. We know what happened.
My first year was Bud.
Right, and then last.
My second year was Les, and then Bud came back.
Bud came back, yep. Yeah,
yeah, and then it became Jerry Burns.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Burnsy.
Burnsy, you know, he let me play. And that's what Bud did.
Well, that's because he didn't know your name. You know, he didn't know anybody's name. He just called your number out, wouldn't he, basically?
What was it?
Burnsy.
Oh, he just points at you. You know what I'm trying to do. So I just look at him. He knows do anything for Burnsy because he was a great coach. Sorry, wasn't able to give him a championship, Super Bowl opportunity, but played the best I could to give him all I could.
Well, that you did, Joey Browner. That's why you're part of the NFL's 1980s All-Decade Team. A great credit to this community, and we so appreciate your time here enlightening us on what a great career you had with the Minnesota Vikings. Thank you so much for your time, Joey.
Well, thank you, Mark.
All right, you've been listening to Vikings Purple Pass. This is Mark Rosen here on The Fan.
Hi, this is Cedric Griffin, and you listen.